This is Wilderness and Wildlife, presented by the Gallatin Wildlife Association in Bozeman, Montana. This is a half-hour program featuring commentaries and interviews with wildlife and wilderness advocates relating to the unique natural environment that we enjoy in the wild lands of the West and across America. I'm your host, Jay Schell. Our guest today, once again, is Dr. Sharon Weaver, curator at the Mammoth Site exhibit in Hot Springs, South Dakota. Sharon holds degrees in geology and geosciences and a PhD in biology from the University of Florida. In the last couple of years, she's become more involved in cave paleontology and caving in general, leading to further research and education opportunities at the Mammoth Site. She first visited the site at age 12. She's been intrigued by it ever since. Sharon's passionate about sharing all the different ways people can study paleontology. She finds that educating others is one of the most important things a scientist can do. Among her professional associations, Sharon is director and environmental education committee chair for the National Speleological Society of America, board member of the Cave Discovery Institute, and member of the Geological Society of America and the Society of Vertebrate Paleontology. At the site, Sharon has concentrated mostly on mammals. Her major projects currently include Ice Age giant ground sloths from the Great Plains region, cave fauna of the Black Hills, exhibit design and development, and adult teacher education programming. So welcome, Sharon. It's good to be talking to you again. Appreciate your willingness to do this.
It's great to be back.
So, Sharon, tell me again about what is now a mound but was once a pit and into which animals fell and died. How old is that pit? How deep does it go, and what's the longest period of time from which you expect to find remains?
Yeah, so the Mammoth Site is actually a sinkhole that formed in the Middaloosa limestone. So groundwater percolated up and eroded away the limestone and created a cavern underground. And the overlying rocks became too heavy and collapsed inward, creating that hole. That hole is about 120 by 150 feet around. And it filled up with warm water. We're in Hot Springs, South Dakota, so we do have some artesian springs. And it kind of filled up, and it went out over the edges a little bit, so it created kind of like a pond area with this really deep sink in the center. We are not quite positive on how deep that sinkhole actually is. What we do know is that it's at least 65 feet deep, and that's based on a drill core sample that was taken, a couple different ones, but that's only as far as the equipment went. And throughout those drill core samples, we did find bone fragments all the way down to the bottom. So we know it's at least 65 feet, probably a lot deeper. As for how long ago it was, we've done recent dating techniques called OSL dating, optically stimulated luminescence dating, directly on the sediments in the bone bed. And we have taken samples of the layer where we first start to find bone and the deepest layer that we have dug down to, which is about 20, 25 feet down from the surface. At that base, 20, 25 feet down, our gates came back roughly 190 to 200,000 years old. And that first top layer where we start to find fossils is about 140,000 years old. And so if you think about it, that is 20 feet with 50,000 years of time pictured samples. And if we have at least another 40-some feet to go, you can kind of get an idea of how far back in time we can really look at the site. But then again, we don't know if it goes even further in time, which is really cool. Well, that sinkhole, as it filled up with water and created this kind of pond-like environment, attracted animals to it. We have what we call the remains of over 61 individuals of Columbian mammoths that have made their way into that deeper part of the sinkhole. And because they chose to go into the deeper end, they had a very hard time getting back out.
Right.
So this Minnelusa rock above it, the next rock layer above it, is actually spearfish shale. And that shale, when it gets wet, is really slick. So if you think about it, they have this deep, this pool, this swimming pool, with edges that are lined with this really slick material. And so mammoths, having really long columnar and round legs with round flat feet, and the way their body weight is distributed, did not have the ability to really pull themselves back up out of that sinkhole. And so it became their kind of final resting place.
All right. They went into the pit in order to forage on plant growth, particularly during the winter months. Isn't that right?
Yeah, they probably foraged on some of the grasses growing up, probably mostly in the shallow end. They may have gone in to have some fresh water to drink, or they may have just gone in to enjoy the water themselves. Mammoths, like elephants, enjoy swimming. Their body shape allows them to be pretty good swimmers. They have a high density of fat in their body, which floats, helps them to float quite a bit. And then they have built-in snorkels with their trunks. So mammoths have been known to swim out from the coast to islands, and elephants have been known to swim quite a few miles around their areas, too, if they have access to it. So it's not uncommon to be thinking about these animals going in to enjoy the water.
But you have quite a range of types of animals, both herbivores that feed on plant growth, but you also have carnivores. And I've wondered why would carnivores go down there? Because they don't eat grass or plant growth.
Right. So our second most common larger mammal that we find at the mammoth site is the giant short-faced bear. And that bear was the largest bear to live in North America. It stood about 5'8" at the shoulder, and when it stood up on its hind legs, it could look into a second-story window. These bears are thought to be omnivorous, which means they eat both meat and plants. And so what we envisioned of our idea or hypothesis as to why we find two individuals of giant short-faced bear at the mammoth site is we think that they probably went in after a mammoth and found out that mammoth wasn't quite dead. Bears would have had the ability to climb themselves back out of the sinkhole, out of the water, because they have pretty powerful forearms. And so we think that they probably met their demise a little bit differently. As for the other carnivores that we find at the site, such as like the canids, so like coyotes, we think some of those bones weren't from the animals going into the sinkhole, but maybe dying in the local region around the area and having storms wash those bones in over time. And so we think the same with some of the other animals that we find at the mammoth site as well, such as camelops, a large camel, hemiakinia, which is a llama. And so those kind of animals we think may have been, their bones may have been from around the sinkhole area and were just washed in.
So what was the landscape like 100,000 years ago? Was it different than it is today? You're in Hot Springs, which is at the south end of the
Black Hills.
Of the Black Hills, and you're right at the west end of the open plain. So what was the landscape like 100,000 years ago?
Yeah, so at the mammoth site, we capture quite a bit of different changes of environment because we're in the ice age. There are multiple different ice age events that happened in the past, and so we're capturing a few different episodes of that, and so we're trying to get better information on the environmental conditions during those times. And so we've recently taken isotope samples. The U.S. Geological Survey from Denver came up and took samples going up one of our walls, columns of sediment that we have in place at 5-centimeter segments to start getting at salinity changes and therefore potentially environmental changes, so we can get a little bit more detailed information on that. Mammoths aren't super good indicators of environment, but when you look for environment questions like that, you're going to want to look at the plants and the small animals, so the rodents. So that's where we kind of get into our cave excavations to get more details about those environmental changes. Caves are a great way of finding all kinds of those little small rodents. Rodents reproduce very quickly, therefore they, what we say, speciate very quickly, and so they are very prime indicators of environment. There's been a lot of erosion that has happened in our area since then. We anticipate more grasses at that time, probably less ponderosa pine. Mammoths are grazers, which means that their primary diet is grasses, versus animals like mastodon, which are more of a browser, and so they're going to be eating more leaves, twigs, etc. And so you'll find those more towards the east coast of North America, where you had more a denser forest region. And so we see during this time too, there are areas where time aspects of the mammothite were warmer than it was today. And so as we go and continue to excavate downward, these are all things that we're going to want to continue to look at, is those differences that we're seeing in snapshots in time through these fluxes in the ice age.
So in terms of the different kinds of species that you find, what are more abundant and what are less abundant in that pit?
So the most abundant animal in general is the Columbia mammoth. And then we would have the next most abundant would be the giant short-faced bear with our two individuals. Everything else is pretty fragmentary, but that doesn't mean that it's not there and doesn't indicate other aspects. We do find occasional rodent teeth. We do find just all kinds of different things. I'm sorry, I'm just going to like... but most of those specimens, like I said, are not in your face as much as the mammoths. The mammoth bones are super large, and you kind of stumble over them. They're everywhere.
You find.
As for the smaller stuff, we find a lot of that in screen washing when we go through our sediments. But we don't have that much smaller stuff, and that's why we look outside to other sites in the region to kind of get at that information.
You find woolly mammoths as well as Columbian, don't you?
Yeah, so we have three specimens that have been attributed to woolly mammoths. If you look at the data itself, it's on the borderline between woolly and Columbian. And so more research needs to be done and more specimens need to be found. But traditionally, we do say that we have woolly mammoth and Columbian mammoth. Because it's right on that border, and it's not unfeasible for them to be woolly mammoths here.
What was the difference between Columbian and woolly?
Well, there's a number of different characters that you can use to separate them. Woolly has more hair and wool, and they tend to be a little bit smaller than Columbian. But one of the easiest indicators between the two species that most people will use if they have the ability to is looking at the molars, so the teeth. The molars have multiple crenulations on them, multiple lines on them, and so you want to count how many lines are within a 10-centimeter segment. If there's more than, I think it's 7, then it's woolly, typically attributed to woolly. If it's less than, it's typically attributed to Columbian.
And so that's
one character, and when you determine a species, sometimes it's really challenging because when you find something, you don't necessarily find the whole thing,
right,
or the complete thing. So maybe the character that defines which species it belongs to is not present on the bone that you found.
And they differ from mastodons. How? What's the...
Right. So mastodons are shorter and stouter. They're kind of like the bulldogs. when you look at Columbian versus mastodon, I mentioned that mammoths and mastodons have different diets. So mammoths are going to be your grass eaters. They're going to have very flattened molars, whereas mastodons are your browsers, and so they're going to have molars that have large cusps on them, so large little pyramid shape aspects to their molars, and that's for crushing the vegetation versus grinding the vegetation.
So they weren't
That is a super easy character to use to separate the two.
So they didn't compete with one another. They had different ecological niches. Is that right?
Correct. Yep.
Okay. And did those animals arrive from Asia? What's their history?
Yes. Yeah, so mammoths, proboscideans came from Eurasia about 2 million years ago.
Ah.
For the mammoths did about 2 million years ago.
And they came across...
had other proboscideans that came earlier and made their way all the way into South America. So it's a very diverse family, and it's been around for a really long time. There's another group. Most people are familiar with mammoths and mastodons, but there's other groups like gomphotheres and things like that. I have friends at the University of Florida that are excavating a site that is a few million years old that has gomphotheres and rhinos at it. And so it's really kind of cool. But that body plan, that type of animal, has been around for a really long time.
Are there any notable animals that you know were in the area but are not found in the pit?
Yeah, so there was most likely American lions around the area and sloths, giant ground sloths, and we haven't found either one of those at the site.
You did find some kind, some species of sloth, though, didn't you?
There are specimens of giant ground sloth found in the state of South Dakota and the surrounding area.
I see, but not in the pit. Okay.
But not at the mammoth site. Nope.
So, were these animals already? Do they differ in their morphology, in their size, depending upon how long ago you find them?
As for mammoth, I don't think there's research that has been done on that. I'm not aware of. For other Ice Age animals, yes, there is research on that. I have a colleague that his name is Dr. Jeff Martin, and he is, what is his title? He has a new title. He's head of bison research in South Dakota, SDSU, I believe. And what he studies is the change in bison size through time. So bison, their size is reflective of environmental changes. So as climate changes and gets warmer, bison decrease in size. And he's done studies even on bison here at Wing Cave National Park, which is near the mammoth site, and seen changes in bison size in even in the last 50 years. And so he's looking at that as possible implications for the bison industry, ranching industry.
So there is evolutionary change that you found among some of the species.
Yeah, and there's other things too, like Berkman's response, which looks at changes in size based on where they are regionally. So with colder regions, animals tend to be a little, some mammals tend to be a little bit larger than warmer regions. Look at deer today, so white-tailed deer today. So white-tailed deer that you find in Minnesota and South Dakota are relatively large, but then if you look at white-tailed deer, let's say in Florida, they're smaller in size. So cooler climates, larger animals, sometimes looking at to elevation changes could also have a change in overall body mass of animals.
And as you excavate, is there a change in what kind of species you find? Do you find certain species of lower down that you don't find more recent and vice versa?
We have not noticed that at the site, but that is a thing that does happen at other localities. So when we look at our cave fossils or cave excavations, we do notice a presence and absence of different species as we dig down. Typically, as you go down, you go back in time. And so those are things that we are constantly watching for and paying attention to.
And here's the big question. Why did the megafauna disappear? And did they disappear at different times, the ones that went extinct?
That is a tricky question because a lot of researchers have varying opinions on why they believe what their evidence is indicating for how these animals disappear. I personally believe it's a complication of multiple factors going on and a lot of stressors on the large megafauna at the time. So if you think about mammoths or elephants, elephants have a 2-year gestation period, which means that an elephant is pregnant for 2 years before they give birth, and they give birth to typically one calf. And so if you have a herd or many herds that are under a lot of stress and are being killed off for various different reasons, it's harder for them to rebound their population.
Mm-hmm.
And when you start taking away these larger food sources, there's more competition for smaller food sources, and then there's more competition within carnivores. And so you get this kind of cascade effect that happens. It is probably more likely that the Ice Age extinctions was a step-by-step process and not just a large mass die-off, like all the species didn't become extinct just one day. And when we talk about time, paleontologists and geologists tend to think of time very differently than most people, because to us, 10,000 years or 100,000 years is a short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Things are happening very quickly because we're thinking about the time of Earth or the time of how long animals have been here, which we're going back, you know, thousands to millions plus years. And so it would have been relatively quickly, but to the average person, they probably wouldn't think of it this quickly. But if you look at the overall evolution of animals through time, it was a very relatively quick die-off.
So I believe that humans arrived through the ice corridor around 13 to 15,000 years ago. To what extent do you think that they were involved in the ultimate extinction of the mammoths?
So there has been some papers that have been done that indicate that mammoths were already under a lot of stress before humans arrived, and that human arrival may have been a tipping point in that. I'm not going to say humans didn't have any impact, but they weren't. I personally believe they weren't the ultimate the cause of it. They were probably impact and added to the cause. They weren't the lone cause in the extinction of mammoths. And that's what I believe based on the research I've done.
Have there been any bird fossils that have been found in the pit?
I believe we have found one bird, like a raptor toe bone at the site. So bird bones tend to be relatively rare to find in most fossil sites. Birds, because they fly, they have a lot of hollow bones, which don't preserve as well. It tends to break up a lot easier. And so we have found one in over 40 years of excavating.
Oh, really? That's pretty rare, yeah. What are the other causes of disappearance that you... Is it just climate change, or was there a change in the kind of grasses that they could consume?
I believe that climate change probably did have a factor. As for grasses, I haven't studied grasses myself. The grasses would have been relatively rich during the Ice Age and pretty plentiful. I mean, we had Great Plains here when people were here, and bison were thriving too. So, but it probably climate change, human, and then I'm not sure what else. There are other theories out there. Some have more merit than others, but again, that is something that's still being researched and looked into.
Are you still working to uncover the remains in the pit? It's an ongoing project.
It is. So we usually have people excavating year-round. Most of our excavation is done in the summertime. We have an internship program that we do. So interns are going to be spending, research interns would spend a pretty decent amount of time in the bone bed excavating. We have an adult volunteer dig program called Ice Age Explorers that individuals can pay to participate in, where they can learn how to dig in the bone bed and learn other paleontological aspects. And so those components, we also have two full-time preparators, so a conservator and a preparator, and they work to help preserve the bones in the bone bed. So yes, so we're still going to be digging at the site. We don't plan on stopping that anytime soon.
And how long do you think that excavation can go on? Is it indefinite?
It does. That is a tricky answer. That's really going to depend on who is in charge of that component of the site. We try to leave as many specimens in place as we can. And so we have some mammoth skeletons that are all articulated, put together like a whole skeleton. And we feel like it loses some of its value by taking it apart and putting it on a shelf in collection. And so some specimens will probably remain in place long term, but other specimens may come out. And it's really going to be up to the individual of that time to decide which specimen can be removed and which ones we want to leave. But I do believe that there's 20 plus years left of excavating at the site.
So the pit may have an existence or a record of going back 200,000 years, but dinosaurs went extinct 65 million years ago. Are there dinosaur excavations somewhere in the area?
Yes, there are excavations for dinosaurs in the greater area. There are in northwestern South Dakota into North Dakota, and into Wyoming, you get a lot of like late Cretaceous fossils, which you were talking about, 65 million years old. And so that would be Triceratops and T-Rex and those kind of dinosaurs. And then we do have the Morrison Formation, which is a late Jurassic formation of rock that has fossils that come out in the greater area too. And so those are going to be more like Stegosaurus and Allosaurus and long-necked dinosaurs that are found. So yeah, dinosaur bones are found in the greater area, but around the mammoth site, we don't typically find dinosaur bones because our rocks don't really correspond with the plentiful time period of dinosaurs, I guess, major formations that we find them in.
Well, Sharon, we have exhausted our time, but this has been very interesting. I really appreciate your willingness to do this again. Our guest today has been Dr. Sharon Weaver, curator of the Mammoth Site in Hot Springs, South Dakota. Go out of your way to pay it a visit. You'll be fascinated by what they've uncovered there. This has been Wilderness and Wildlife, a presentation of the Gallatin Wildlife Association in Bozeman, Montana. To hear more of these half-hour interviews, go online to js-wilderness.com and see additional features of our website. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Jay Shell.